Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Marico Limited Q4 FY22 earnings conference call. We have with us the senior management of Marico, represented by Mr. Saugata Gupta, MD and CEO, and Mr. Pawan Agarwal, CFO. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that the Q&A session is only for institutional investors and analysts, and therefore, if there is anybody else who is not an institutional investor or analyst but would like to ask question, please directly reach out to Marico's investor relations team. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Saugata Gupta for his opening comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I hope all of you, your friends and family are keeping safe and healthy. FY22 came to a close on a relatively positive note for us as we stepped up our performance consistently through the year, despite a variety of external disturbances in the operating environment, whether it's the new COVID variants, geopolitical tensions, demand slowdown, or even sharp spikes and volatility in input costs. Given the circumstances, we have single-mindedly focused on strengthening our brands and executing smartly, which reflects in a consistent double-digit revenue growth on a two-year basis and robust market share and penetration wins across our domestic portfolio. Our international business has been a beacon of strength, having delivered double-digit constant currency growth for a fifth quarter in a row and charted a predictable and profitable growth journey over most of the last 5 years with a very healthy ROCE. We have been also able to inch our gross margin sequentially for a third quarter in a row with calibrated price hikes, cost rationalization, and about half of our raw material basket, that is copra, being deflationary. However, despite the continuous cost pressure at an overall level on a YOY basis, we have chosen to ramp up investments in brand building and not compromise on the long-term health of our brand equities to manage short-term profits. We're also making visible progress in our ESG program, which is also showing up in the improvement in independent ESG ratings and multiple ESG recognitions throughout the year. The motto of making a difference and our belief in conscious capitalism has been the cornerstone of Marico's purpose since the very beginning. It has been our long-standing belief that sustainable and purposeful business will stand the test of time and drive superior long-term performance. We have now introduced multiple sustainability initiatives across our global operations and recently announced a commitment to achieve net zero emissions in our global operations by 2040. I'm delighted to report that we have surpassed our 2022 ESG goals, and we'll soon release our focus areas and goals for the next decade of action. Coming to the quarter gone by, in India, persistent inflation continued to suppress consumption sentiment despite daily economic activity and mobility now largely back to normal. As a result, FMCG market volumes decelerated further, with rural slowing down more than urban and growth being price-led. In this challenging context, we stayed well ahead of the market as our volumes were steady on a year-over-year basis, even on an exceptionally steep base of 25%. Rural has been behind urban for us as well, and we are hopeful of a recovery in rural demand towards the second half of next year if we have good monsoons and government spending in front-ended. Delving into the India business, Parachute Coconut Oil has been proactive in passing on value to consumers in a soft copra environment, and we expect it to maintain its strong position going ahead. The Saffola franchise grew by 30% plus in FY22. Saffola edible oils has commendably held its volumes this year on a very high base of 17%. Following the recent surge in edible oil prices, we expect to remain competitive in the market in the near term. In foods, I'm delighted to report that we have made our aspirational top-line target for this year. Amongst the new products launched last year, soya chunks have already scaled above 50 crores. In about a year's time, Oodles and Chyawanprash has been slower and will stay invested in the superior product proposition. With the launch of Saffola Peanut Butter and Saffola Mayonnaise, the total addressable market of the brand Saffola has expanded to circa ₹6,000 crores. We have set our sights on the INR 850 to 1000 crore target in foods over the next couple of years. In value-added hair oils, we'll maintain our focus on premiumizing the mix to innovation to drive double-digit value growth over the medium term. Premium personal care has grown in high double digits this year. Beardo has crossed the 100 crore annual run rate on exit basis, which gives us tremendous confidence and shows that we have got the model right, and it is tracking much ahead of acquisition assumptions. JustHerbs has also met internal targets. Our digital-first brands have clocked INR 180 crore-200 crore in annual run rate on exit basis, and we will continue to be aggressive towards building a 450 crore-500 crore portfolio by FY 2024. In the international business, we had a stellar quarter and year, with each of the markets contributing handsomely. In Bangladesh, we continue the diversification journey through accelerated growth in hair care, including shampoo and baby care portfolios. In Vietnam and MENA, we have realigned the leadership structure to be able to replicate attributes from the strategy that has worked in Bangladesh in order to build a sustained growth momentum in both the businesses. The MENA market presents an attractive growth opportunity, and we'll invest to grow in this market. We are confident of delivering healthy growth over the medium term in South Africa and the export businesses as well. Looking forward, the near-term demand outlook is uncertain, but we are confident of staying ahead of market growth, winning market share, and gaining penetration. We also expect margins to be subdued in the near term, but there is some degree of comfort given that copra prices should remain benign throughout the year, and it constitutes half of our raw material basket. Both demand and margin trends should improve towards the second half of this year. Overall, we are hopeful that we'll be able to cope with all the stress factors in Q1 and get into a rhythm when things start easing out from August, September, because of base correction as well as relative demand and input cost stability. Over the medium term, we'll continue to do what we are doing well in terms of driving sustainable and profitable growth in the core domestic and overseas franchises, managing costs aggressively and staying true to our purpose in our ESG commitments. However, to unlock the next leg of growth, we believe that we need to get the four dimensions right to deliver long-term double-digit value growth. We call them four Ds. The first D is diversification of business, both in domestic and international markets. In domestic, there are three pillars: premiumization of hair nourishment, turbocharged growth in foods, and scale up premium personal care digital-first brands. Out of the three, we have seen early successes in two, and the premiumization of hair nourishment is the work in progress. In international, we'll continue to scale up non-CNO portfolio in Bangladesh and similarly expand the addressable market of the businesses in Southeast Asia and MENA by replicating our successful model in Bangladesh. The second D is distribution. We'll continue efforts towards go-to-market transformation in urban and rural. We are scaling up a dedicated food GTM in order to drive our aspirational target in foods. In addition, we have institutionalized a framework internally known as Sales 3.0 to strengthen our micro-market focus and execution, bring enhanced agility with on-ground decision-making, and leverage technology and analytics. The new framework or structure represents a shift in our sales operating structure from core divisions, that is North, East, South, and West, to multiple 7 to 8 clusters, which are defined based on similar consumer behavior, brand preferences, and geographical contiguity. We expect similar headroom for driving distribution-led growth in all our key international markets of Bangladesh, Vietnam, Saudi, and Egypt. The third D stands for digital. We're investing towards raising the digital quotient across the value chain to make the organization future-ready. This is also reflecting in the talent we are hiring and how we are imbibing a new ways of working, which we believe is to enable us to transform into a digital-savvy organization and win amongst evolving consumers and marketplaces. The last D, but not the least, is diversity. We are consistently working towards building diversity in terms of gender and thought and our talent pool process across all levels of the organization. We are amplifying equal opportunity for all at the workplace and believe that a positive, enabling and inclusive culture will give us a strong and competitive edge over the longer term. So just to repeat the four D's, this is basically: the first one is diversification, the second one is distribution, the third is digital, and the fourth is diversity. I would like to close my comments by conveying my gratitude to all Marico members and associates for the exemplary commitment and dedication over the years and the last couple of years in particular. We are gradually returning to seeing our teams in offices with a reasonably permanent hybrid setup and pray that the pandemic is now largely behind us. Thank you for your patient listening, and we'll now take your questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The first question is from the line of Percy Panthaki from IFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, Saugata and team. Good evening. My first question is on Parachute. I understand last quarter, I think you had mentioned that this time you have been ahead of the curve in taking the price corrections, and you've gone through two or three rounds of price corrections, and therefore you feel that there would not be any market share loss to the smaller or unorganized players as has been in the past when there has been a commodity deflationary cycle. So now despite this, the volume has come very, very subdued. So just wanted to understand what has happened in this category. Is it still that there has been some amount of market share loss to the small and unorganized players?
If you look at it, I think largely we have gained market share, 170 bits volume market share gain in rigid packs. Number two, the category decline is slightly lower than the FMCG decline. I think the FMCG decline last quarter has been minus 5 in volume, and CNO decline is around minus 4. We are ahead of our decline is around minus 1 on a base of 29. So actually, the 2-year CAGR is a comfortable double digits. Also, I think full year, we have been around 5% volume growth, which is in line with our medium term. We have taken price drop this time proactively. It takes around 45 to 50 days for that to affect in the market because of the overall pipeline between CNFA to distributor, distributor to retail, especially in retail and rural markets. You also cognizant of the fact that obviously given the kind of a rural stress, the conversions from unbranded to branded will be a little challenge. Having said that, I think given that we'll continue to expand distribution in rural and the fact that we continue to be this time proactive in pricing, and you must realize that I think in terms of whether it's working capital, supply chain agility in these kinds of inflationary times, we would be advantaged. I think we are fairly certain of protecting market share and getting back to the medium term volumes for the full year.
Okay. And in VAHO, I was looking at your CAGR on a 3-year basis because now 2-year basis is also not valid because the 2-year basis is also COVID affected. So on a 3-year basis for this quarter, our value CAGR is 1%, which means that the volume will be 0 to negative. So again, just wanted to understand in this category over 3 years, we have not seen any growth. So is this also a category issue or is this a market share issue? What is really happening here?
So again, if you look at it, I don't think if you look at personal care category, a 3-year basis also the numbers are similar. So also you must realize that VAHO in 2020 got affected in the April also because of there was no production for 22 days and we couldn't sell it. So if I take that aside, this year also, we have not, actually there has been hardly any price increases in VAHO, only now in the last quarter, because the largely in 20 and 21, it has been benign in terms of food. And in fact, there has been price drop. So volume and this one are largely in line. So I don't think there is a difference in it. And as you know that a significant portion of VAHO, there is also a rural kind of a bias. So I believe that, yes, 3 years is stress, but you have to also say that none of the years it was business as usual.
No, so if I take Q4 FY19 as my starting point, and I look at Q4 FY19 versus Q4 FY22, yes, Q4 FY22, there is of course the overall FMCG slowdown, but I'm assuming Q4 FY19 would be a normal quarter, right?
No, but that is the base. So I'm talking, you have to take 20, 21 and 22. So 20, quarter four was not a normal quarter where we wouldn't sell in the last 7 or 10 days. So all I'm trying to say is there's nothing more worrying.
So only the point to point will matter. What happens in between will not.
No, I completely agree with you. So all I'm trying to say is there's no difference from any personal care category.
Correct. Correct.
And if I look at your three-year CAGR for the entire group and of entire India FMCG, which is six, which is ahead of the personal care category, 6-7%, that's our, you know, three-year CAGR.
Right. So then coming on to the macro part, if it's basically only the macro and poor overall FMCG demand which is causing this, how do you look at this situation evolving over the next 2-3 quarters?
See, again, as I said, that two things. One is obviously there will be a, you know, kind of input cost pressure definitely, and I don't see that abating very, very soon. Having said that, two things we will do. We will strive to, you know, grow ahead of the market and also gain market share. Number two, I think as far as copra is concerned, that part we are pretty reasonably okay because of the input cost pressure, and we have taken proactive with the Parachute business. In fact, Parachute, by the way, just that we are, you know, if you look at the three-year number, that's far more. I think it's 5%. So, for example, Parachute 3 years, we have delivered our medium-term aspiration. So, secondly, if you look at the base effect, obviously quarter one base continues to be high. I think a volume base of 16%, if I remember. So 21%, sorry, 21%, then moved to 6% and then to flat and 1%, kind of a number. So I think the base will also start correcting itself. In fact, we had seen this year, the past year, the slowdown starting sometime in September. So a combination, as I said in my opening commentary, we believe that both the input cost situation and the relative demand situation with the base correction will tend to ease itself out. So therefore, I think you will see a better second half than the first half. Having said that, I think Parachute is something we should be able to deliver the medium-term aspiration. Number two is we continue to stay invested behind foods and, you know, our digital business. They don't seem to be significantly impacted even this quarter where there was no inorganic component because we just launched mayonnaise and, you know, this one in peanut butter on the last day almost. And you are seeing, you know, it's actually in April that was the launch. Foods delivered around a 17% kind of a growth, which was like to like. There has been no new launches this quarter. So I think if you look at the fact that we will continue to grow with digital and foods and the fact that Parachute is in recent context, I think we should get back into a rhythm of growth in the second half.
Sure. And just a housekeeping, can you give us the absolute sales you've clocked on your foods and digital brands for the full year?
For the foods, is between, you know, 450 and 500 crores.
And the digital
And this is
brand, how
exit runway digital is 180 to 200.
exit run rate? Okay.
Quarter four run rate. It's
okay, understood. Thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vivek Maheshwari from Jefferies. Please go ahead. Mr. Vivek Maheshwari, your line is in talk mode. Please go ahead with your question.
Sure. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah.
So one question, Saugata and Pawan. You know, we have, I mean, one thing that always stood about, you know, Marico was your disclosure. So, you know, quarter after quarter, we are seeing, you know, one or the other disclosure going, you know, down or going off the release. So let's say this time around, it's international domestic margins. It has been volume growth. What has suddenly changed, you know, for a decade or more than that, you were so consistent with your disclosure. And suddenly in the last few quarters, you have completely changed that stance. So what has changed is, you know, I just want to understand.
Yeah, thanks, Vivek, for this question. So I think largely there were two changes that we've done in the last 2-3 quarters. One was the Saffola volume growth and then Wahoo volume growth. And we had talked about as to what are the reasons for not disclosing this volume growth because some of the internal parameters we had moved to value-led parameters. And therefore, it was only right for us to align the external communication in line with what we are tracking internally. So that's the major change. And rest all what we are talking about is not very, very significant. And if required, we could always discuss those offline. But these are not very significant disclosures. And we don't think that that's going to impact the readability or the understanding of the performance. And therefore, we'll continue with this.
Just to add, I think we have just align the internal KPIs with the external KPIs. So whatever we are, it is there in our internal KPIs and external KPIs, and it's better to track, you know, have similar KPIs. That's about it.
Okay. My request still would be that, you know, you may want to reconsider, because, you know, if there was one company which always stood out on disclosure, that was always you. And you have also gone down a lot at the time when, you know, some of the peers have actually increased disclosure. So that's just a, you know, one suggestion. The other bit is on the
Vivek, as I said, the only thing is that we ensure that the understanding of the business performance, that is not compromised with. We are only holding back certain information which we believe from a competitive standpoint could hurt us. And that's the reason we have cut down on certain disclosures. But I think still, if you compare with any other companies in the peer set, we believe that we have one of the best disclosures in the industry.
Right, Pawan. I mean, you have been around for long, right? You know, suddenly why worry about competition when you never worried about competition for, you know, for most part of your journey? So what has changed in that context in the last, let's say, 4 quarters? Why suddenly you worry about competition now and not any time in the past?
So I think, Vic, I think the competitive intensity can change, market structure can change, and you have to at least, you know, respect the fact that we have aligned, as I said, internal and external KPIs, and we believe that, you know, we are trying our best to whatever, you know, we want to, you know, in terms of in our presentation, the kind of, that gives us a fair idea about the business performance. Having said that, I think we are open to suggestions, and you can please provide those suggestions offline.
Sure, I will do that. Second is, you know, given how the oil tables are moving up, do you see any risk to, you know, from a coconut oil standpoint or, and therefore copra, do you see any bit of, I don't think inflation necessarily will come back given, you know, where the peak was in the cycle, but do you think, you know, some of the, let's say, assumptions or estimates you have had on copra, those get challenged given how the competing oil prices are behaving?
As you know that copra is a insulated market structure because, you know, imports are not allowed, and therefore whatever the best estimate of supply and demand we have indicates that it will stay relatively benign for the rest of the year. And as you know that as we speak in May, we have a visibility of the harvest because the season has started sometime. The season starts sometime in the third week of March. And given everything, we are pretty confident. Having said that, obviously you can't anytime prevent any black swan. I think we are fairly certain that at this point in time, at least over the next 6 to 9 months, and this is the season where obviously that, you know, that leads to a flood, and the season is pretty good as of now.
Okay. And Saugata, just a follow-up, you know, pardon me if my understanding is not correct, but if the competing oil prices move up, there will be enough. So I understand that, you know, India in several ways from a soft commodity standpoint, you know, can be very different from what the Asian, Southeast Asian, you know, or global market prices are. But given the competing oil prices are moving up, that you think will not impact copra or coconut oil?
Yeah, because if you see last year, and if you look at historically 10 years, there's no correlation between copra and, you know, say other things like other vegetable oils, you know, like sunflower oil, or if you look at the data, the S&D is slightly different, the usage is slightly different, and, you know, so therefore I think that is the reason. And as I said, that the harvest is good, it's domestic harvest, fairly robust harvest, and obviously if there is inflation, we'll see, but as I said, that if the season is good and season prices are good, I think most of the year is taken care of.
Got it. Got it. Thank you and wish you all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kunal Vora from BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Actually, like almost a continuation of the previous question. Can you share your thoughts on how the disruption in the global edible oil market, how it impacts your business? Is there an interplay between copra and other edible oils? If not in India, in Indonesia, is there a case? And with other edible oils being highly inflationary, copra being deflationary, are there any benefits you see of customers looking copra as an option or like the customer will be very different? You can share your thoughts on this.
So as far as the Indonesia is concerned, it is with respect to palm. Yes, we import for our international markets copra from Indonesia and some other countries in Southeast Asia. The palm ban in Indonesia has had no impact on copra. Having said that, obviously there has been international prices have been slightly bullish, but I think it's unlikely to impact any margins in the international business drastically. And as far as I said, that the copra usage is different from coconut, you know, in terms of, you know, other vegetable oils, that the correlation is slightly, you know, the correlation is not very high. And I have the visibility of the season. And as you know, that during the season, we procure a significant part of the copra for the year. I think it gives us the fair idea that at least in the immediate term, there is no such risk.
Sure. Thanks. Second one, how is Saffola doing in terms of volumes? Edible oil prices have moved up sharply for customer is facing inflation across categories. Is the customer downgrading? What are the trends which are you seeing in case of Saffola edible oil usage? Are you losing some customers you had acquired during last couple of years?
So Saffola, as we said, that the volume has been flattish for the quarter. Obviously, you know, there has been significant inflation, and therefore which reduces the, you know, the whatever I call the conversion rate of people upgrading. A significant portion of the Saffola consumers actually come from, you know, the segment who also believe in healthy living and therefore consume less oil, and therefore the total incremental outlay is less. Having said that, I think if there is consistent inflation for a large period of time, there could be some risk of downgrading, and that is there for any every category.
Sure. And lastly, if you can talk about the competition in the VAHO segment and like why it remains much higher compared to other categories. This is one category in which you've not seen any meaningful price increases. Is it because of low inflation or industry is sacrificing margins here?
Actually, it's not. I think what has happened is there has been some price increases which have been taken. Having said that, I think there has been increased activity at the bottom of pyramid, and therefore some of the subcategories of brands that are growing as are at growing at the bottom of pyramid. Having said that, if crude continues to remain at these kind of levels, I think there will be price increases in this category. And some in our cases also, I think while we have taken a combination of some price increase and some volume correction in the packs, so which is also a surrogate price increase.
And just to confirm, Kunal, we have taken about 5 to 6% price increase in the month of March because of the increase.
Understood. Okay, that's it from my side. Thanks, Kunal. Thanks, Agota.
Thank you. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Shirish Pardeshi from Centrum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Saugata and team. Thanks for the opportunity. I have one structural information and fundamental thoughts. The category penetration for PCNO is very large, and you have been actively expanding the distribution. So I was looking for your qualitative comment. When you are saying on slide 8, you are saying that FMCG market has declined minus 4% YOY. So specifically in terms of if you can split what is the coconut growth category in quarter 4 YOY and VAHO growth in quarter 4. And the second part to it, you just mentioned that the value end of the VAHO was also growing for us or the industry almost 6-7 quarters, and it is showing a negative trend. At least the syndicated data, what I have seen in the month of February, showing negative trend. So any qualitative comment, what's changing structurally in the VAHO segment?
So first to answer your question, I think the FMCG overall is decline in this quarter has been 4%. I think personal care is 9. Coconut, as far as VAHO is concerned, 8. So coconut VAHO and FMCG, I mean, VAHO is slightly more than FMCG decline, but in line with the overall personal care. And coconut is in line with the FMCG, which is -4. Having said that, I think if you look at the three-year CAGR, annual CAGR, I think PCNOR volumes are 5%, and so it's particularly in line. Coming to the VAHO question, I think what has happened is essentially a lot of growth in the bottom of pyramid obviously has come from rural. And if I look at the stress factor in rural has been pretty high. A lot of growth that happens in the category, and this is true for some of the categories which have premium offerings, which are done by some of the premium brands or new age digital brands, which has happened in, which is sold through e-com, modern trade and beauty outlets. I think that growth has got less impacted, and I'm not so sure whether in some of these categories, like I'll give you an example. Does Nielsen actually capture how much is onion oil getting sold, for example? Or some of the premium hair fall that's sold in digital or e-commerce. So we believe whatever data we have, that segment is relatively less impacted than what has the impact in rural. And that is the reason I think if you look at that, the bottom of pyramid growth has also got impacted and rural has got more impacted. Because if you look at in e-commerce, some of the categories, we are not seeing that kind of an impact, or in modern trade, that kind of impact.
Okay. That's really helpful. My second question is on the foods part. You have done a lot of extension. Now, in the medium to long term, you will keep inventing and adding more sub-adjacencies to Saffola franchise. But if I pick your brains in last 4 to 5 quarters, whatever new addition you have done, which things it will take you to a higher level or your aspirational level of Saffola franchise food being more than 500 crore?
I think, as I said, that we have hit a number which is between 450 and 500 crore in line with our aspirations. I think oats and masala oats continue to grow, and we have expanded penetration, expanded the category. Soya and honey has both crossed 50 crore mark, and it is in line with our aspirations. We have some job to do in noodles and Chyawanprash. I think what we are looking at is essentially, and also we are creating a portfolio that actually supports our GTM, separate GTM of food, which we prototyped successfully in two markets, and we are scaling up this year, which is a completely separate GTM from our standard sales system, and which will have a dedicated national head, which will drive the food journey. I think we are looking at products which expand the total Saffola addressable market, which Saffola can provide, which are better for you in any of the segments. We are looking at, we might not get into the center of plate. We will look at in between meals, and we are looking at intermediaries, and that's the reason we have got into accompaniments like peanut butter and mayonnaise and some of the spreads. So we have picked up in overall structure, if I had to give you a picture, we are looking at medium-sized categories which have tailwinds over the medium to long term, with penetration which are penetration which is low to medium, where Saffola has a right to win by offering a differentiated or a better for you category. And we are looking for categories which are primarily can be sold through urban food GTM, as well as modern trade and e-commerce. We will not get into something which is rural. We will not get into products which are sold in PAN Plus, because we don't want to, we don't have that distribution. Neither will go into things like cold chain products.
Okay, that's really helpful. If I may squeeze one question on international. Vietnam, we have been seeing a lot of turnaround. Is the problem in Vietnam geography is completely solved, and that could be a next big leg of growth for us in next 2 to 3 quarters?
So I think, see, Vietnam has been a combination of two things. I think, yes, you're right. I think we have had a little bit of year-over-year till 2 years. Also, the fact that Vietnam had got impacted by two rounds of COVID, and they had a much, they also had some format of lockdown. Also, we had had a single category presence. We have now started doing well on foods out there. We have started regaining market share. I think we've, in international markets, and I've told this before, is we believe, you know, if a disciplined organic approach of getting the portfolio right, getting the go-to-market right, getting the cost structure right, and getting the right talent and processes, and all four, when they run in tandem, there is this rhythm of growth or virtuous cycle of growth. And I think we have had this successful model in Bangladesh, where we believe that we are clearly, in terms of clearly in HPC, we are the number two company, which you know, which is normally done by other people in the world in various other markets, and we are extremely confident of the diversification journey. I think I put the learnings in place, including, for example, localization of senior leadership, getting the right talent, and we believe that both, not only in Vietnam but MENA, where there is a clear profit pool and market share pool in to be taken from competition, we'll be able to aggressively replicate this. I think amongst all our peer companies, we have the healthiest international business, highest ROC, consistent growth. We are in markets, all the three markets are stable in terms of economic growth, in terms of Forex, we don't have no such problems. And therefore, I think I'm pretty confident our international business has entered a virtuous cycle of growth.
That's really helpful, Saugata. Thank you for answering my questions, and all the best to you and the team.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harit Kapoor from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, good evening. We'll just go through two things.
Mr. Kapoor, sorry to interrupt you. We are not able to hear your audio, sir.
Yeah, can you hear me now? Is it better?
Yes.
Yes, slightly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So just two questions. The first question is on, you know, coconut oil. I just wanted to understand, you know, with this, with an element of downtrading across categories that market is seeing, you know, is it possible that, you know, coconut oil growth, you know, picks up at the cost of, you know, value added, at least in the near term? Just wanted to understand, you know, how you're thinking about that. That's my first question.
So as far as coconut oil is concerned, I think we have to have the right pricing for right conversion from unbranded to branded. We'll continue to invest behind rural distribution. As you know, our rural market share is slightly behind urban market share. As long as we do that and take proactive pricing calls, I think we should be able to deliver the medium-term growth aspirations.
Yeah, Sokala, I wanted to just understand, you know, whether the, you know, whether you could see a downtrading benefit in PCNO from maybe the lower end value added hair oil, given that there are price increases likely in those, and, you know, parachute price increases won't happen. So could that be a scenario which could potentially play out over next 2-3 quarters? Is that even possible?
So if we get a PCNO pricing right, I think there will be no downtrading back to from, you know, branded to loose.
Got it. The second question is on the foods GTM journey. If you could just help me understand, you know, what a little bit more on, you know, what work we are doing there, and, you know, how what areas you know, we can see accelerated growth being driven by the foods kind of GTM. And I just wanted to, you know, get your sense on what changes need to be made there, you know, to be able to drive faster growth through already. You know, the fact that we've already launched several new products, you know, what needs to be done on that food GTM journey?
So I think the biggest one is getting the food GTM right. And I spoke about the fact that we are segregated a food GTM earlier. It was, so we prototyped it at a distributor level. We are now putting dedicated managerial and a national, this one, for a food GTM, where a senior leader will actually drive the food GTM without any escape button. So that is, you know, his or her only role into driving the alternate GTM. So therefore, to me, food GTM is the biggest thing. It's because if you really look at food, whether it's between modern trade, e-com, and urban set of food outlets, especially standalone modern trade outlets, I think that is where the kind of categories we have launched, you get a significant part of the weighted D. You don't need to get into mass distribution too, because that doesn't, that gives you volume, num D, but doesn't give you weighted D. So to me, that's the first thing. The second thing is, I think we will continue to dive rural distribution. We are still under indexed in a couple of states where we have to go. We believe rural, given the fact that wholesale as a channel will continue to deplete, I think direct rural distribution will become a source of competitive advantage and an entry barrier for competitive action. And lastly, I think what we have done, which while it's not a distribution job, but we now have a channel-wise assortment to prevent any what I call channel conflict, and we operate to a large extent successfully a MOP or a minimum operating price across all channels. So therefore the noise levels, in fact, which was there in 2019 as far as channel conflict is concerned, has been largely addressed. And we believe that each channel has a role to play, and each channel we look at as a separate P&L. So therefore, I think all the alternate channels and the new channels as a separate P&L approach, so that we ensure that we sell an assortment such that while the cost of sale in each channel can be, you know, different, but at least your net contribution level is reasonably neutral.
Got it. Thanks for this. Wish you all the best.
Thank you. Participants, to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question is from the line of Siddharth Bhattacharya from Anvil Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah. Hi. My question was more from the point of understanding the edible oils business, the Saffola as well as the virgin oil categories that you've launched. So in my assumption, I believe the blended oils would be a significant portion of your total business segment, right?
And then, for Saffola, yes, Saffola, we only sell blended. As in, it's not blended, right? it's a multi-seed oil and we sell multi-seed oil, yeah.
Okay. So my question regarding that is, basically, from a production standpoint, do we have enough levers in place in terms of blending ratios, you know, that allow us to sort of take care of inflationary pressure in any of the input oils that come through?
No. So our entire endeavor is to design scientifically oils and the ratios which is best for consumers in terms of heart health. And therefore, we don't change it. It is not like soap that you keep on changing total fatty matter or something like that. We, as you know, as a Saffola brand, we, if I giving an 80-20, whatever, we have also made some changes in the past, but is in line with scientific evidence of in terms of the PUFA-MUFA balance. So, sure. We don't just because of inflation keep on changing formulations.
Okay, but is there a range that you follow or is it like...
No. You can't.
You can't. Okay. And I also wanted to understand with your launch of these virgin oils, which I see the olive oil as well as the coconut oil, what is the game plan over here?
No, it's a very, very small digital. It's largely available in, you know, in e-commerce, and it's we are just participating in it. And it's, if you ask me very honestly, in this, it's just a mere participation strategy. There is no big aspiration or game plan on this.
Okay. Got that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rakesh Roy from Insect Securities and Finance. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So my first question is regarding, sir, can you highlight on the demand scenario in the international market, because Bangladesh market also facing high inflation, sir. So can you give me an idea, sir?
I think most of the markets where we participate in, other than Egypt, there is inflation, not significant inflation. I think Egypt and South Africa, there's a little more inflation. As you know, Asian countries are more rice-eating and rice-producing countries, and therefore the food inflation is relatively low. It has happened in more where, you know, it's where wheat is imported, and that is the moral trend. I think we are more or less in control of the situation, and there are some countries in our Indian neighborhood which are facing far high inflationary trends where we don't have that much significant presence.
Yeah, just to know, sir, that Bangladesh inflation is also on 17-month high, sir. in there also we are saying some.
Yeah, but India also, inflation is 17 month high. So I don't think if there is something. What I'm saying is there is nothing disruptive as far as our growth journey in Bangladesh is concerned.
Okay, sir. Okay, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gaurang Kakkar from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So I just had one question regarding Saffola Oil. So in response to the earlier participant, you indicated that there is no change in terms of blend in terms of oil just because of inflation. So I had a question in terms of the pricing of Saffola Total versus Saffola Gold. So if you look at the pricing 3-4 years back, Saffola Total used to be at a 20-25% premium to Saffola Gold. And today the pricing is almost similar. So is it that we are taking a hit on the margins for Saffola Total with the inflation which is there? Or is there some other thought to it?
No. I don't think it is, unless somebody is providing a discount, still there is a differential in pricing. I don't think it's equal. But having said that, the gap has reduced a bit. So to give you an example, if you now go to Amazon or Instamart, I think you will see there is still a 10-15% gap between the prices. Unless there has been some discount you have seen being specially run on Total. But the pricing, there is a difference. I think it is 230 and 265, I think.
Actually, I was looking at the MRP data and it was like 255 and 250, which like 3-4 years back was 200 and
Gold is 230, not 250.
No, Gaurang, what would also happen is that it could be also possibility that the earlier MRP of gold could be there in the market, or the newer MRP and the old MRP of Kurdi, and therefore the price difference could be lower. Number one. Number two, as Shaugata mentioned, the difference would have come down because what also happens in such a hyperinflationary scenario, that absolute outlay becomes very, very important. So to that extent, the price increase may be slightly on the lower side for Total, but the difference definitely exists.
Sure, that helps. And just to get a sense, maybe gold would be the largest brand in Saffola, say 40-50% contribution, if you can put some numbers.
No,
in
I
that.
Can't. No, no. We are not going to do this. I mean,
so we do not disclose
the equal contribution, but yes, gold is a...
Right. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Thanks a lot for listening on the call. To conclude, we ended the year on a good note with India business putting up a resilient performance amidst tough macros, while international business continued its consistent outperformance. We also defied sharp cost pressures to deliver a double-digit EBITDA growth. Going forward, given the uncertain environment that we are in, it is difficult to gauge how demand will pan out in the near term. However, we are quite confident that we'll continue to beat the market in both India and international business. While there is unprecedented cost push in various cost line items, we draw comfort from the fact that Copra is on deflationary trend, and this, along with other cost control measures, should definitely help us to manage the pressure on margins. If you have any further queries, please feel free to reach out to our IR team and we'll be happy to address the same. That is it from our side. Stay safe and take care.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Marico Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.